And it is so great to have him. Marty Kanner, of course, a Long Island economist extraordinaire, as I have stated all along. And a pleasure to have him here on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Marty, how are you? Belated Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Yes, and a belated Happy New Year to you. I'm glad we're able to celebrate.
Indeed. And, of course, Marty, the director, Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy. Nobody better to discuss. So, you know, I kind of stated last week where we are at right now as a country, locally here, too. To me, Marty, it's about policies. You know, policies kind of dictate what we are all going through right now, especially at the pumps, the grocery stores, you know, anything right now. You go to a restaurant, it's about policies. That could change, but you have to change policy. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. What we're seeing is whether they be unintended or intended consequences of government policy. And, you know, we see it around the country that government policies by governors are different. But you know, the results sometimes seem to be the same. Whether you lock down or you leave open, or cases increase or cases decrease, we find that, you know, I'm seeing as the numbers come in, you know, the economy in certain places that did not shut down are doing better than those that did shut down. So, you know, after, you know, I'm really anxious to see, after all this is over, a really good academic analysis of the government policies and what their economic ramifications were, so it doesn't happen again in terms of economic policies to react to a pandemic or a health crisis.
You know, you look at the supply chain shortages, right? Everything has a domino effect when you think about it. And especially when you go to the stores. You know, if you don't have enough on the shelves, it creates a gridlock, you know. In essence, it's the same thing at the pump. You look at the pump, the gas prices. I look at some of these pipelines that were halted when this administration took over. I look at OPEC. I look at, you know, even going to our own resources, which we don't do. All these are contributing factors as far as what we are seeing right now at the gas pumps.
Absolutely. When the president shut down the pipelines, the first thing to appease the, you know, the climate change folks, he started the downward roll of America. You cannot take America off dependency of oil or fossil fuels like turning off a light switch. It's got to take decades to do it, and slowly and surely, and he yanked it. He started that. In terms of what's going on in ships waiting to unload their cargo, I mean, the Transportation Secretary Buttigieg, the worst I've ever seen in my life. He goes out there for a press event. Meanwhile, the ships in Los Angeles Harbor have increased from 70 to 100. Now waiting to offload. And this was after the president made his big press event saying, look, I'm going to take care of COVID and we're going to work 24/7. Well, they're already working 24/7. This has been such a bungled, mishandled crisis in terms of the supply chain issues, which are impacting the cost of cars. Used cars are 50% higher. Gasoline is over $1.20 higher than when Biden took over. We have inflation is the highest level since 1982. Producer price index, the highest level since 2010. Wages have gone up 4%. Inflation's up 7%, which means you actually lost 3% of your spending capability if you were lucky enough to get a 4% raise. This has been an incredibly bungled handling of the economy on the national level, and you know, it's time to. It's really time to start saying things have to change.
Marty Kanner with us. We'll get into that in a second, but it's not only inflation, Marty. I look at the latest jobless claims. You know, that to me serves as a reminder that the labor market is really screwed up. I mean, even, you know, you listen to this president claiming, come on, he's making progress on the economy when you have 230,000 or so initial jobless claims. That's the highest since November. 15% higher, by the way, than what many had thought. And, you know, they've been running at lows, historic lows. But a lot of the analysts, you know, fear, listen, these businesses just can't hang on anymore. They're closing down. They're laying off people because of this latest surge of the virus. Vaccine mandates don't help the cause. Thank goodness the Supreme Court had a little common sense last week. But, you know, the bigger problem is this labor market. You have a record number of people who quit. You have job openings remaining near historic highs. The labor force participation rate remains low. The manpower shortages, you know, kind of feed these price hikes as well, right?
Well, yeah, and let me throw some other numbers at you. We still have right now close to 10.4 million job postings by employers for jobs that have not been filled. We have close to 3.9 pre-pandemic jobs which have not come back. So, you know, that's where the issue really is. The unemployment is about people unemployed are 6.9 million people in this country. So just look at this, Jay. 6.9 people unemployed, 10.3 million jobs that are available, which are not being taken. And 3.9 million pre-pandemic jobs have not come back. So what's going on? What's going on is that people fear COVID. Polls have come out and surveys have come out that have shown that people have now said that working from home is preferable than going in. Businesses have learned to make it to be efficient with people working remotely instead of coming into the office. We're seeing a restructuring of how businesses operate and how the workforce operates, and that's something that's very important. That's why New York City is having problems. The new mayor just seems to be falling right in lockstep with de Blasio in terms of how he's dealing with crime. He just can't say, the new mayor, he insists that businesses reopen and bring their employees back. Employees have said they're not coming back. Fear of COVID. Inflation, this is another thing. Inflation and the cost of living has now replaced the fear of COVID as the one in two issues in this country for the workforce. And all we're hearing about, and rightly so, but all we're hearing about is COVID and lockdowns and masks and making it difficult for businesses to operate. And we're not seeing really a plan. And you said at the beginning, Jay, and you're right. It's about policy. It's about focus. If the policy is to open up businesses and to get the economy back, then you focus on your policies, how to do that. But the policies now are remote learning in schools. We're hearing the mayor talk about it, restricting people from coming in to work. The policies are focused on, in my opinion, it's been 2 years for this pandemic. We have to learn how to live with it. And live with it safely and have the economy open up, and government, at least in this state and New Jersey, in the tri-state area, are too afraid, in my opinion, they're too afraid to deal with the economics of the issue, and they fall back on the social, the COVID and stuff, because that's where their advisors are telling them. Very disappointed in the leadership in the tri-state region.
I'm with you 1,000%. Marty Canna with us. Let's not forget, and I touched upon it a little over a week ago when the report came out, where, you know, we talk about inflation, 7%, you know, over the 12 months ending December, highest spike in four decades, Marty. But, you know, you look at these wholesale prices surging, 9.7%, I think it was. That's the biggest jump in almost 12 years.
Absolutely.
And that says a lot as well when you look at those numbers as far as wholesale.
You know why? Market. Because if the producer price index is up 9%, then you know that consumer prices are going to increase to 9%, if not more, because the producer prices reflect what wholesalers are selling the goods for and what retailers have to pay for it. So they have to increase their prices. And you talked about the labor force retailers have to increase their prices and people don't buy because the prices are too high and they're being driven online to buy product at a lower price, then that means the surge of hiring for Christmas season in both retail and tourism, January is going to be job losses. and they're going to cut back. And let's talk about the Federal Reserve for 1 second, because they're the real wild card coming in. They've been reducing their spending. During the pandemic, they were printing $120 billion a month. That's over $1.4 trillion since the pandemic began, to keep the economy going and keeping interest rates low. They have been now tapering those bond purchases, that $120 billion at $30 billion a month. By April, it's all gone. We're seeing that lack of money increasing mortgage rates. They just crept up the other day. And then when the Federal Reserve increases interest rates to try to curb inflation, which, by the way, inflation was caused by the progressive modern monetary theory, which basically said print money willy-nilly to get into the economy. We'll worry about inflation now. Well, guess what? Inflation is here. It's more severe than anybody thought. And when the interest rates go up, that means credit card rates go up, car loans go up, mortgage rates go up. And those rates go up and cost more to business, and businesses lay off people. So we're going to see. I don't think we've seen the worst yet. I've got my fingers crossed that the Federal Reserve does it gradually and pays close attention, because if they make a mistake, we're going to go into a recession, and that's what nobody wants. And I will tell you this: the Federal Reserve, I'm kind of concerned, because I remember Jerome Powell, the chairman, said, "Oh, inflation was transitory a year ago." And all of us who understand the economy know he was full of hooey, because he was doing that because he wanted to get reappointed. And I'm sure there was pressure from the president to say it was transitory and things will get better. Well, they haven't gotten better. They've gotten worse. So the Federal Reserve, I'm very concerned. I want to keep a close eye and see what they do.
You took the word right out of my mouth, and I was just about to bring it up to you. Sometimes words can be harmful. When you hear the president use that word, transitory, folks, transitory, right? Not permanent, okay? When you hear him, and by the way, Powell said the same thing.
Oh, of course. I mean, Powell said it first.
How detrimental is that word from these types of leaders? Transitory. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, their mistake was, because this is all, when you say transitory, that means I'm not going to take effective government policy to attack inflation. Now, everybody knows, these are smart people at the Federal Reserve. They're not idiots. And they're really smart. They're sharp. They understand this. The Council of Economic Advisors the president has are sharp. They knew this, but they were trying to hide it from the American people, praying that things would turn around. But unfortunately, government policies didn't focus on getting people back to work and drive the underpinnings of the economy to grow. We have an economy that's based upon printing money, fiat money. That means money without any kind of gold backing. We have fiat money, and that money has been out there, and that's what kept most people going. Now what's happening is, without the free money that was spent, which was inflationary, now you've got your issues. And so government has to start dealing with it. And we're not hearing anything. All we're hearing, and I'm sorry, I mean, I once really liked President Biden, but I'm tired of his ranting and finger pointing and nastiness. We need good, fair, solid policies to get us out of this mess. And I'm one, but two-thirds of the country agree with me. We're concerned that this president is not up to the job.
You look at his ratings and everything else, 53% disapprove of how he is handling office. You know, I mean, listen, you, me, and others, this guy will go down as worst president in the history of the country.
And the other thing that we have to worry about is that in Europe, you know, nobody pays attention to Europe, but Europe, inflation is up in Europe, and we are now our balance of trade. That means balance of trade means if we import more than we export, that means we're not producing enough in this country, and our balance of trade is negative, because we are not exporting as much as we used to, and the European countries are not buying as much from us as they used to, and that's important for production here in the United States. So we have a national problem. It's an international problem. We have China now, who is one of our biggest trading partners. You know, China, I think it's the second largest country that owns our debt is China. So, you know, when our foreign policy is running amok. So I'm really concerned about where we go. And I think the next 6 months are going to be very trying for the U.S. economy.
Tony Cannon with us a couple of minutes. You know, even you look at the surge of the virus, you know, the president said he would shut it down. He would never impose mandates. You know, he's flip-flopped on everything he has said. And to me, as stated in the beginning of our conversation, you know, it's about policies. Policies can be turned around, okay? And that's the most troubling of this all, because we know those policies are not going to be turned around. That's the most demeaning part of this whole thing, Marty, is the fact that this is a fix. There is a fix in the works if he does that, but he won't. Because of what is happening in our political landscape right now. The political pandering is more important to individuals than the health of this nation. That is the most troubling aspect of this all.
You know, a pandering is a good word, but you know, what we have in this on these issues is what they call groupthink. And groupthink is basically, if everybody's thinking the same way, then nobody's thinking. And that's what's going on. We suppress in this country where we have free speech, we suppress those people who disagree with government policies. I mean, you take a look at Bruce Blake with the Nassau County executive. But all he said was parents should be involved in terms of wearing masks for kids in schools. And he's pushing back on Hochul, and the whole world is coming down on him. But he's taking, you know, he's expressing another point of view. And you know, that's what this country is about. It's about debate and point of view. And you know something? It's been 2 years that we've been operating under this pandemic, and the rules haven't changed yet on how to do this. It's time to take a hard look and say, how do we open up this economy safely? And we're going to have, you know, 25, 30, 40 million people in this country who refuse to get vaccinated. And so we have to find a way to integrate those folks into the economy safely, so we're all protected, rather than ostracize the people who won't get vaccines.
I've said this all throughout. The anti-vaxxing messages are more detrimental than anything else. You need, it's all about the tone of the message. We can't be threatening mandates. And I got to tell you, this governor coming into play here has done such a horrendous job with that. It's terrible. It really is. And you look at everything involved in, that's not the way you get things going, by shutting them down and threatening. She's going at it with Blakeman over the mask. Oh, we'll threaten funding and everything. That's the way to do it if you're a governor? I mean, come on.
I mean, she's trying hard, but she's almost like Cuomo 2.0. She's trying to show she's tough on the job. But to say that if you don't do this, we're going to withhold school aid, please. You know, and now look what's happening. The rates, the positivity rates in New York State have gone down to the lowest level. They're about half what they were about a week and a half ago. So maybe Blakeman is not wrong. You know, maybe he's got a point to consider. And, it's, you know, instead of Hochul, you know, beating him up, it's time to sit down and talk and say, how's the best way to do this? You know, and we're not seeing that. We're not seeing, you know, I grew up in a world where people, you know, responded and talked and had bipartisan conversations, and there wasn't vilification if you don't agree with me. Well, you know, it's time to start getting back to that again and come up with a good policy that gets everybody in this country back to work and in a safe manner. And we're not hearing that.
No, you're not. And, you know, let's face it, the fact of the matter is, you know, everybody says you got to listen to the science and everything else, data, blah, blah, blah. You know, science tells us that this virus, these types of viruses are going to be out there forever. You know, they're going to mutate and everything else. Listen, we've got to somehow function based on it. You know, we've got to live our lives. Yeah, if you get vaxxed, I say alone, it'll protect you. You don't want to get vaxxed, don't get vaxxed. But we're going to keep getting the message out there in a positive way, but we can't shut down our lives based on it. It's going to be, I don't see any foreseeable future where we're not going to have a variant to talk about. You know, one will lead to another. It depends on the season and everything else. This thing is cresting now, okay? It's cresting now. And we expected that. But then there'll be another one coming up, you know? We've got to live with it.
That's what they say. You know, someone mentioned to me that that medical people have said there's going to be peaks and valleys as we go forward with the virus. And that's what I said before. We have to learn to live with this and make our workplaces and our tourist venues and everything safe for everybody. And if that means that, you know, we have to do testing as part of our normal life, so be it. You know, but we have to learn to live with this thing like we're learning to live with the flu and we're learning to live with all the other diseases in this world. And that's what the government message should be. Not restricting, you know, not having the president say, you know, businesses with over 100 employees have to test. You know, what about the small businesses, 30% of which have not come back and have closed since the pandemic began? What about a small little business with four people, you know, four employees who either show up or don't show up? And this guy is losing his workers and can't stay in business because of government mandates. You know, we have to start paying attention to small business. Oh, close to 90% of all our businesses on Long Island are small, which means they're 10 employees or less. And we have so these people, these businesses can survive because these businesses are the ones that hire most Long Islanders. And we're not hearing that leadership from government.
It really is. And listen, you always look for, you know, a sliver of hope. And I don't see it with this administration. I just don't. You know, all we got to do, we got to try and somehow get through this.
What disappoints me, and you are right in what you say. Here we have the governor is up for re-election in her own right this year, and now we have Swazi, who is going to Congressman Swazi wants to primary her, but every part of the Democratic leadership in this state is locking up behind the governor. You know, I think it's time. I'm tired of imperial governors. It's time for a real debate about the issues, and candidates to step forward and say, you know, governor, I don't agree with you. And here's why, and this is what you could be doing different. That's what we ought to be hearing right now.
And it's so much about party affiliation, it makes me sick. Because, you know, you see the Long Island Five, you know, the senatorial group here, all sticking behind Kathy Hochul. Why? I'm going to get them all on. I know Senator John Brooks, Jim Gorin. I want to know why. What is the basis of backing a cat? I can't figure that out, you know?
Well, you know
it
something?
It can't always
further.
Be. Marty, it can't always be about the party. I mean, right. Enough is enough. You know what I'm saying?
I would respectfully ask you to take a look at the agenda, bail reform, all this stuff. Why are they doing it? Why are they falling lockstep behind the New York City-centric administrations? Are they being threatened that there will be no school aid for Long Island if they don't lockstep and you know, back other programs? I think those are great questions to ask, Jay. I'd love to hear those shows.
Hear John Brooks. You're going to hear John Brooks in a couple of days. You're going to hear Jimmy Gorin in a couple of days. Excellent. We'll get Anna Kaplan on. I want Kevin Thomas. Well, Kevin Thomas is a lost cause. But in essence, these people have some answering to do.
Well, I'll tell you what.
You mean to tell me bail reform is not at the top of your agenda? Do you see what's going on? Has Kathy Hochul tried to turn around? I mean, she selected a lieutenant governor whose mantra was to defund the police.
I know, and you have a DA in Manhattan who doesn't want to prosecute certain crimes. I mean, that's not his job to determine what to prosecute. He's supposed to follow the law. And the mayor now refuses to engage him and sends out his police commissioner to do it. It makes me very depressed to think about it. And we need a strong, vibrant, economically vibrant New York City. Because Long Island, whereas we have our own vibrant economy, about $160 billion gross regional product, which is a nice, healthy regional product, a lot of our business is from New York City, and we need a strong New York City economy, and it's going to take more than the governor, the mayor demanding that businesses come back to the city and bring back their employees. There's a perception problem that New York City is not safe, and unless that perception goes away, people aren't going to come back into the city.
Hell hath no fury come November the 8th. There's a reason. There's a reason why Todd Kominski lost by 50,000 votes, Dan Donnelly, for the DA's post in Nassau. There's a reason. There's a reason why Ray Tinney knocked Tim Sweeney right out of the box. They are, and these are signs. See, that's the positive nature of it all. There are signs out there that people need to make change. You saw that on November the 2nd. Will you see that again in a bigger way come November the 8th this year?
That's the I think that we're going to see it. I think that that people have now gotten it. They're, after 2 years of the pandemic, after exhausting their savings, after exhausting the government money, with over 14,000 Long Islanders in danger of losing their homes because they can't afford the mortgages, you have an angry electorate. And I've run political campaigns, and I would much rather run with an angry electorate, because the angry people come out and vote, and the people who are satisfied don't. We have an angry national, state, and local electorate that's angry about government policy. It goes back to what you said in the beginning, Jay. It's all about government policies and the message that voters are getting and citizens are getting. And quite frankly, I think citizens and voters are getting fed up with the message that they're hearing from the CDC and from our elected officials. They're tired.
I'm tired, too. And I happen to be an angry morning man. And I'll tell you one thing. We're going to hold feet to fire. I'm going to tell you right now. I promise you. Marty, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to have you. You stay well, stay safe, my friend, all right? We'll talk soon.
And you too. Anytime, Jay, give me a call.